and welcome to another edition of Kaleidoscope. This is Magda Zenon, recording from a very warm Nicosia, and with me in my virtual studio, all the way from Colombia, I have Rosa Emilia Salamanca, director of CIACIA, a Colombian peacebuilding organization with a particular focus on women's rights and strengthening public policy, and also a fellow member of WASL, the Women's Alliance for Security Leadership. Welcome, Rosa Emilia.
Thank you so much, Magda. It's a pleasure to be here with you and in your side, in the other part of the world. It's incredible to be here together.
It is. And the name so lovely of my institution. Yeah. I'm glad you're going to correct the name of your institution.
It's CIACIA. And yes, it's a feminist institution that is, we have our offices in Colombia, and we work especially in peace issues and economical issues also. We have two big programs on that.
Rosa Emilia, in looking over all the work you have done, I cannot start to tell the listeners who Rosa Emilia is, beyond saying that Rosa Emilia is very focused on inclusive peacebuilding, and you've worked from the indigenous and grassroots level up to state level. So you've covered up a broad range of levels that you speak at about inclusive peacebuilding, which specifically in our case means including all the women or all the diverse groups that are within the community. But I'll leave you to introduce yourself even more.
Thank you so much, Magda. Yes. Well, I'm part of a whole movement in Colombia, a whole women's movement that is quite strong. And we have been working, we have a very important like an architecture of work in civil society and especially in women's areas. So we work in the international level, we work in the national level, and we work in the roots level, because we think this is the way we can move the system. We have to move the system from the most important local parts to the most important global making decisions. So we really think this is a way that all the pieces of this chain are very important. All women in the chain, in a very horizontal way, we can make something that we can move the system. And it's hard, but yes, we work very much. And one of the things I want to bring on board, Magda, is that as other societies, we are very diverse. In Latin America, we are very diverse societies. We think that Latin America is very Occidental or very European or United States way. But Latin America is very big. And it's so diverse. So yes, as you have said, we have indigenous people that have so many different communities and so many different languages. I cannot tell you how many languages are in Latin America that come from indigenous places, but it's something like, I don't know, 500, 600 different languages.
I didn't realize it was that many.
Many, 600, I don't know, from the north to the south, we have incredible cultural importance in the value of languages. And then we have so much diversity in our ways, in our culture, in the way we have people that are living in places that are like deserts, or we have people in the high mountains, or we have people in the near sea. And then we had all the people that came from slavery. And there were so many people that were brought to America from all these ships that were crossing the sea
oceans
and bringing new people. And so we have so much diverse Afro-descendant people. So And they are different because they come from different places from Africa. So they have different cultures. When they were anciently born, but also because they were part of this horrible slavery chain that was, or English or whatever. So they adopted different ways of behavior through slavery also. So we have it's so rich and so incredible. So when you hear Latin American music, for example, you hear some sounds of many people.
Mm.
We have the drums from Africa, we have the flutes from Indians, we have also what the colonialism left us, no? All the different cultures from the Spaniards, from the Portuguese, from English. So, well, Latin America is very interesting. So talking about inclusion is really a challenge nowadays. So now talking about peace and inclusion in Latin America is very complex. Very complex because there is a whole arising of new ways, new citizenships, new constituencies that were never seen. So we now are seeing the Afro-descendant people that have so many different ways of naming themselves, but we have also all the indigenous people that are rising and saying, we have culture, we have languages, we have ways of behavior, we don't want to be more seen like people that don't know, that they are ignorant. And then we have all the mestizo people. I think in English you understand what mestizo, that it's a mixture between Afro, indigenous, Spaniards, Portuguese, and so. But they are not white people. They are mestizo.
Mm.
And mestizo is like the joint of many cultures in people that bring over another version of all these cultures. So it's very interesting. And well, Latin America have also people that are direct descendants of people that came from Europe or came from other places. Now we have a lot of Japanese people living in Latin America. In Peru, for example, Japanese people are very important. They even had a Japanese president.
Oh, yes, right. I remember, yes.
Yeah. But you know what people.
You know what this reminds me of, Rosa Emilia? I live in Cyprus, okay? And Cyprus is traditionally Greek Cypriot and Turkish Cypriot. And every time they go into peace negotiations, these are the only two communities that are spoken about. Yet we are not only Greek Cypriot and Turkish Cypriot. We've got Armenians, Latins, Maronites. And with the world, the way the world is changing, we've got Russians, we've got Filipinos, we've got Japanese, we've got Chinese, we've got Arabs. And yet when they talk about peace building or going to the table, they talk about bicommunal. And a lot of us keep on saying, you know what? How can you talk about bicommunal? It is not reflective of the, look around you. Why are you silencing people around you? And I find this binary, and I read an article about you, this use of the binary is so constipated because it puts people against each other, okay? But the minute you have more than two people, I think it would be easier to solve because you're not focusing, you're not losing against another or gaining against one person. But that's the thing a lot of us peace builders in Cyprus are trying to say, we are no longer a bicommunal society. We are multicultural. We are multicultural, and it's beautiful because firstly, these people contribute to taxes and to jobs and to skills and talents. They also bring in culture and music and food and laughter and different words. Why are we not giving them a space for their voices to be heard? So I think this inclusion and this multiculturalism is an issue around in South America. It's obviously a lot more complicated because of all the conquerors that came past and all the shit. But here we've got newcomers, the Russians. We've got all the signs in one of the city are in Russian, yet the Russians aren't heard at the table, or the Turks, or the Greeks. So I think we need to move everyone away from this binary black white.
Yeah, that is English, so French. And that is so important because then people will own peace.
Exactly.
If you are out of negotiations, if you are out of information, if you are out of the processes, whatever you design it as, you don't appropriate of the process. You don't own. You are not an owner of the process. And if you are not a constituency of the process, you will never mind a better process. So that is one of the main points. We need to own a process, a negotiation, whatever it looks like. And we have to design a process that makes us inclusive, not only as victims. And this is very important because in the Colombian case, now that I will narrow a little bit the focus to Colombia, I will say that in the process between the government of Colombia and the FARC, many people were very important because there were ways and we achieve a design of the process that will hear people. And that was very important. But then they will hear a lot of people. They will not give all the information back. They were not telling what were the advances, what there were challenges. They heard, they want information from the people, but it was very difficult to have a pedagogical way of telling people what were the outcomes of all this process. So it must be something that goes and comes with society. And you that are such a good communicator knows that you appropriate or you really value something that you understand.
Yes.
That you know what it means. And you don't allow people just to go with their imaginations. And now that we have the fake news and so on, so people have their own conclusions. And I think that we have to be very, very careful about the way we present information, how we really tell the truth, how we communicate with people, different people, how we communicate with indigenous people. Well, but in that arena, I have to tell you that being and having a good and a very good success in many ways in that agreement, especially for women, that we did an incredible work all together, indigenous women, Afro-descendant women, mestizo people, women, and so on. So we joined and we did a very good job.
You also included women from the rebel forces, did you not?
Yeah, which is
very important.
They were part of the negotiation, rebels, government. We did a very good work between all of us. But then to make it, we came to this horrible moment of the referendum. And after that, we kept working and finally we achieved the final agreement for peace. And that was very important. But people didn't understand what many people, because societies that are in conflict are very polarized, as you say. They are binomial. They are confronted.
Yes.
So you have to explain so much because the whole society have a lot of ideas. So I think in that process, we didn't communicate as we should. And we didn't revise points that was a clue, like security. And one of the ideas that we are working on is to make more sophisticated a concept of transitional security. Transitional security as transitional justice. And all these issues are very important for people, because you have, and you know, that after a negotiation and agreement, many things will happen. There yes. will be many spoilers. There will be a lot of people that don't want this agreement because they will affect their interests. And that is the case of Colombia. So implementation, we are not longer talking about inclusion in negotiations. Okay, we have some advances. We need to design better the negotiation. We need to give information. We need to make part of it the whole society in different ways, multi-level, multi-lector. It's a whole negotiation. Mm. But then implementation is another issue. And I think we break down all processes, break down in implementation.
So and how do you go to everyone when you do the implementation? Because as far as I know, Colombia has very densely populated city centers, but then there's a lot of population that's out in isolated places. So how do you get to everyone?
No, I mean, everyone is having a very good strategic plan, and this agreement had it. But the point I want to get on is you have to have also a very clear political lecture. So in Colombia, we achieved the agreement. We have the first 2 or 3 years of implementation and designing that were very good. The fast track for the laws and the first... it was a design of having special places for ex-combatants and having special projects for the communities that were highly affected. And then we, as women, insisted that we have to have dialogues between population and that we have to work and make the workshops about the process and so on and so. But then... the right wing came on power and gained the elections.
Oh.
And they used an incredible word that was, we are going to make this agreement ashes. And that was the way they announced the policy against the agreement. So we have periods of 4 years of government. And they really work in the agreement in such a slow way with such resistance. So we lost four incredible years of implementation. While we didn't have a focus on security, we have the most traditional idea of security. We were working slowly in transitional justice and everything. So violence arose again. But arose in a way, people were very angry. So we didn't only have an incredible crash of the negotiations and how slowly they were and all the problems that it brought, but it gave place for the dissidences of the FARC to demonstrate that
this wasn't working.
Was just nonsense.
Yes.
Was not working.
What was not working?
So they came to arms again, and they grow. You cannot imagine how much they have been grown. So, we had incredible 4 years that were completely lost, and also there were many problems in the money that we had for implementation, because they have denounced a lot of corruption problems that really make the use of the money for peace in other things that were never towards what we need for peace and the agreement achievements. So, in that, and we have narco traffic. You know that we have narco traffic, but in our country, and it's not a problem of Colombia. It's the problem that we have lost the war against the drugs, and all the world knows that, but they really want to keep looking some countries like the narco traffickers. And, you know, this is incredible because our war has joined the interest of war, whatever for some is revolutions, justice, whatever they want, and illegal crime.
Yes.
Because the illegal crime is the one that is giving the money to this. So it's a huge problem. I talk about this because now women have a lot of challenges in the field and in what we call the total peace, that is the proposal of the actual government. They talk about total peace. And we agree that we need a total peace.
Mm.
But working for a total peace means working with all the rebel groups that we have. And we is still, you cannot believe it, we have ELN, we have Nueva Marquetalia, that are the dissidences that came out from the agreement. Then we have the dissidences that never came to the agreement, and others that you can look around, small groups and so on. And you have what we call El Clan del Golfo. And the Clan del Golfo is all the organized crime that now is organized. It's very organized.
Yes, it's very organized.
They are an incredible business sector that have a lot of things, but also have an army. So the challenges we are having now are higher, because we understand, now we understand, that our women's peace and security agenda only can be achieved if the people want to achieve them, because the people are the ones that are involved in the rebel groups or in,
yes,
crime.
Exactly.
Because they are our brothers, our sisters, our friends, whatever, or other Latin American people that are having a very hard time. Venezuela people, people from the Ecuador, that has, well, Ecuador is something that is incredible, because in Ecuador, they received a lot of they learned about these gangs, and now they didn't have the strength to
stand
to
up
really,
against them.
Yeah, so they just crash again, and that is very difficult. But now we have this problem from Mexico to Argentina to Chile to the last point of America. So it's not more a problem of Colombia.
No, I agree with you.
Or Bolivia.
They always say Colombia is the drug capital of the world. They don't put it in the context of the continent because it's a continental problem.
Yeah, and Colombia is far away of being the capital of this.
Mm.
Now we have Mexico is incredibly strong, and the narcotraffic business in Colombia has gone a little bit down, but that means that many of these people that are in crime, they are looking for other ways of gaining money. Mm-hmm. And that means all this prostitution of women,
exactly,
in the frontiers.
Or the labor prostitution. Trafficking of people for labor, for cheap labor.
Not only labor, but prostitution.
Yes. Now, when the people talk about the trafficking of people, they tend to think of prostitution. They forget about the people that get trafficked because they can be sold for labor.
Yeah.
So how do we change
that? And that is for other countries.
Yes. How do we change the way people see security or the way we teach security?
Yeah. So we are working very hard on that, because we think that we need to change. And maybe it sounds a little bit naive, but we need, as women, to change the center of security. Security is based in control. security is based in controlling everything from the state.
Mm.
That's why we are seeing the states that we are seeing now and how everything is going right, because they need to have the control. So this idea of the control of the state, of the control of the capitalism, is the way security is framed. What women and what we are working is how, if we shape security from care, like we are shaping economy from a care perspective, mm. as we are shaping negotiations from a care perspective, as we are shaping societies from a care perspective, health, mental health, and self-protection.
I think this was a lesson that COVID taught us as well. COVID taught us, unless we protect and value care, we have nothing left. Care is the center of everything.
Yeah, that is correct. So we are designing a way that care will be the center of security. And it's the center because, as you have said previously, you are in an incredible warm place because of climate change. Mm. So if we don't take care and we don't change our behaviors in many ways, we are not going to achieve peace. We are not going to change the economical models. We are not going to, because we need to change our head.
Mm.
It's not competition, it's collaboration.
Absolutely.
And this is the word of women that is coming stronger. We don't want this kind of control. We want care, and we want to give care. So I think that we are shaping, as a women's movement, a security that is based in care, changing completely the sense of control to the change of care. And that's when you say that people have to hear the word of women, is because we really want, we are what we call a contracultural movement, because we have enough, and enough is enough.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are up to here with wars, we are up to here with all these economical mechanisms that provide all the places for organized crime.
At every level.
We are fed up with all the exclusion. We are fed up of seeing everything white and black. We are fed up with
the poverty.
We are fed up. We are fed up. So, Magda, inclusion nowadays from women's side means changing the idea of the world, changing the idea that inclusion is bringing women to the table. No, inclusion is bringing women to the table, hearing what they have to say, and changing the clues of negotiation and peace building. That is a political change. That's what we need, that inclusion means.
But I agree with
the
you.
Word,
but I agree with you because we often just say, you know what, we need women at the table. Well, no, we don't just need women at the table. We need voices to be heard. And we also need diverse women at the table. So it must not just be me that's middle class, healthy, educated. No. You need someone who can speak indigenous. You need diverse women at the table and diverse in color as well. Because from what I understand, Colombia is as diverse as it gets. No, you're right. It's not just being at the table, it's actually listening to the voices and incorporating it into what comes out.
Yeah, negotiation must be something that you are dealing for a change. It's a tool of change. It's not only silencing the arms or this kind of, we came in agreement and it's an elite agreement almost all the time. It must be a tool for change of societies. So what we agree must be implemented in a way that societies will change. But in many ways, ethically, economically, socially, culturally, I mean, is a huge change. You cannot only negotiate, you are going to put your arms off. Yeah, but why? We are creating new democracies. I think that the democracies we have up to now, they are a disaster. Mm. They are in crisis.
Because
and a civil crisis. Because a culture worldwide crisis. Because what we have said before, we are fed up with all the models we have now. Mm. But we have the opportunity of create something, and we are in the moment of change. So inclusion is for change. It's for change, not only for saying, yes, and we have the word of women and talking about the same model. No, it's for change. And
how do you make people change? Because something's been developing here in Cyprus of a women's coalition, okay? But what is apparent is that it's a woman coalition, an elite woman coalition. So to me, there is no change. A patriarchy is replacing a patriarchal women. So how do you get people, and as the people that do want change in whatever way they see it, to actually understand that you've got to not be feeding into the same narrative that has been fed to you all the years, that if you want to bring change, it's not just changing the faces. It's changing the way you do things, or the way you listen to things, or the way you... Yeah. How do you do that shift? That shift is so hard.
Well, I think that you that are mediator and me too, we know that this is done through dialogue. So when we talk, we have to hear. And that's why I call, we have to have multi-actor and in between women, multi-actor and multi-level conversations. Because, you know, when we talk about inclusion, then we take this woman that is so good and we take it to the table. But she has to have people behind. Mm. Or many people have to create mechanisms to be heard. Our experience, we have created many mechanisms. Colombians are incredible in mechanisms. So we have many platforms for women. So we have joined people different from the local places to national. So we are very active in joining ourselves and creating platforms, movements that can make some kind of lobbying and really pushing towards some of the objectives that we have. But that hasn't been enough. So, you know, 2 weeks ago, we had a meeting, a huge meeting from all the platforms, all the women's platforms, very different. We don't work all the time together. We have a lot of differences. One are too white, others are too black, others are too Indian, whatever. We joined together because one of the main points we want to discuss nowadays is the women's social movement and the feminist movement as a real political subject.
Mm.
Because we are not a political subject. We are the ones that, you know, when we want to talk in the political arena, and I'm not talking about political parties. Mm. I'm talking about constituencies.
Yes, yes.
When we want to talk as constituencies in a very political way, they look at us like, what? These women are all the time crying. Yeah. And we give so many things to them, and they are victims, and we are doing this. But they look at us as beneficiaries.
Beneficiaries, yes.
And they don't look as political actors. So we are asking ourselves, why cannot be achieved and seen as really political subjects, as political constituencies, not as people that you have to take care of.
Can I interrupt you there? In this meeting, in this meeting, we were just in New York, and there were women from around the globe. One of the women actually said, "You know what? We have to step out of the victim mode. We have to take control of our agency. We can do this, and we've got each other's backs. So we've got to step out of this. And I want and I need. Step inside and have your say and speak from a position." Of assertion. It's not I'm asking you. It's not please give it to me. This is happening. So we've actually got to, you're right, we've got to step out of this victim mode of, oh, poor us, we have no rights and we need to get our rights back. And no, we take them back. We take them back and they are ours. And I think that's the way we need to teach ourselves to speak.
Yeah, so we need to teach ourselves to speak. That is the answer to your question. We need to do a lot of work with women. We need to take care of ourselves. We need to see ourselves. You know, my hair is, as you see, is very curly. And I, of course, in myself, I had African blood also because my grandfather or whatever was black. But then when I was young, I all the time want to have my hair
straight.
Straight. And I want to be another person. I want to have incredible white shaping because I think I was not nice like I am. Because I have curly hair, I have big noses, I have whatever.
You're gorgeous, my friend. Model.
But I was not the model, my dear.
No.
I was not the model.
We all suffered from that.
I suffered very much. And then someone told me one day, "Rosamilia, why don't you like your hair?" And I say, "Because it's very difficult and it's not straight and it's, I don't know, I don't like it." And this person told me, "And why you are so racist with yourself?" And I was shocked with that. I was shocked. And I, all the time I'm talking about not being racist. And not being excluded, and so. And then I saw that me, myself, was doing so racist, so many things towards myself. So I just want to bring this example, because sometimes everything begins with us.
You actually, I read something in another interview of yours, is that we've got to step back and accept our own paradoxes. And you made a comment about you don't sometimes accept that someone else can be right and you are right and that you're acting patriarchally, like a patriarch. And I read this sentence and I thought, damn, I'm thinking I do exactly the same thing. And I think to me that in everything I read about you, that was the one thing that made such a light bulb moment that we sometimes – think we're walking that walk and we're not. We actually, but it's okay. If we actually understand
it's okay.
But we need to understand that we're doing it as well.
So I think that you have to embrace your paradoxes. Mm. You are not going to, these words that come so, they are so cruel because you have to be consequent. You have to be this, you have to be correct, you have to be everything. No, human beings and women are not that. We have to embrace all the things, good and bad, that we have. And we have to embrace them and look at them with all our care, with all our love. And when you see them, you realize that you can change it.
Yes.
But if you don't, and nowadays I like my hair. Well, you have seen me for many years. Now I have my curly hair all the time. I don't want to make it straight. But this is very important because when you accept yourself as you are, you can accept others' indifference.
Yes.
And this is very difficult for women. Very difficult. Because we have been shaped in a way that what we should be, not what we are.
Yes.
So it's very difficult to accept ourselves as we are and be proud of ourselves, although we know that we are not perfect.
And
that we make,
and
yeah.
even though
but
a lot of
care.
Us
that is care.
And even though we do know that we are awesome, because we all know that we've done some incredible things in our lives. And yet, I was looking at myself today and I was at the beach. This morning I went to the beach and I thought, oh, I don't like the fact that I'm overweight. And then I thought to myself, you know what? Why am I judging myself? This is who I am. I'm okay. I'm gorgeous. This is who I am. Let me accept my gorgeous, maybe not, but let me accept my body the way it is and move on. I cannot be exactly what the adverts are telling me I should be. And as you said, the straight hair or whatever. So it's a very big challenge to actually walk the talk of not giving into the social constructs and actually accepting your unique beauty.
Yeah, but the importance of this acceptance is that then you feel strong to change the world.
Yes.
If you don't accept yourself and you're struggling all the time with yourself, it is more difficult to change the world because you are not going to accept what it is. You will always will want what it is not. And you want to shape the world in a way that other people will tell you to shape it. So you don't have a self opinion. So when you tell me how you change, we have to do a lot of work between us of acceptance, of respect, of hearing others, embraces, between colors, between cultures, between everything. Every time I see you, Magda, I feel such an incredible respect and love for you. And I hear to you, and you are always teaching me things. So we can see each other as masters, as the one that is learning all the time. We are learning from us. And when we are in Wassel, I think that is one of the incredible things, that we see all these incredible different women, but we can embrace and we can really take care of all of us all together, because we recognize difference and we know that recognitions of difference is vital for inclusion.
I think that's the beauty. Sorry, carry on.
Yeah, and that is the beauty. And inclusion is so important, but an ethical, transforming inclusion, not just because we want to be in the picture, not because we want to be in the photo, not because that is going to bring us more projects.
Uh-huh.
It's because we are so strong that we understand from ourselves to others what difference, the richness of difference, the richness of cultures, the richness of women, human beings, and what we bring through the world, through our words, to care, through care. And I think that is the most incredible strength that we have. But we don't use it. Don't use it the way we should.
I agree with you. I was going to say that's what I feel when I'm one of the beauties of Wassel in comparison to other networks that I belong to, is that there's a lot more contact because of our weekly, bi-weekly meetings. And a lot of, we see each other and we learn from each other. What I've learned from you and a lot of the other ladies in Wassel, purely because I've sat down to listen. And at times I put my ego aside and not insisted and I know better. So to me, it's what you say. It mustn't just be, well, I want to be part of this network, so let me agree with everyone or like everyone. It's actually walking the talk of listening. I know that when I went to the latest forum in, that we were now in, Albania, I came back exhausted. And the reason I came back exhausted is because I come from a country in conflict, but I'm safe. Okay. My life is not at risk in Cyprus. I've got a roof over my head. I've got a job. I've got food on the table. And there were so many women, like the Palestinian woman, the Afghan woman, that all I could do was give them a hug. That's all I could do. And they were actually coming to me afterwards and saying, can we have a hug today? And I actually came back. But to me, it was transforming because I realized that even a hug, even listening to someone enough to just give them a hug, not say a word, just put your arms around them and then take it forward is very, very strengthening for both of us. The person that's getting hugged and the hugger.
Incredible. Yeah, when I came back from Albania, where we were together, I don't know, I cried for 1 week. I was so emotionally touched, but at the same time that I was so, because we came back very tired.
Mm.
As you said, we were so transformed.
Mm.
We were so touched. So it was really incredible. I'm still thinking about that meeting. It was really an incredible impact meeting. So, Magda.
Because we're coming to the end of this.
Final words.
Yes, good. Because we're ending
my final words.
Of inspiration.
I really want us, and I'm involving you, we need to be a political subject. We need to be seen as not only as a constitutional people of our countries. We need to be constituencies of the world. So one of the things that I want and we really want as women from Latin America is we cannot any longer talk about our countries without seeing the whole context. So now we need to be a local movement, a national movement, but a continental movement and a world movement.
Absolutely.
And I know, Magda, that you and me are part of that global movement that is really committed to change the way we behave as humans. It's not only the way we perform. It's the way we behave.
If it's
really very dangerous.
If we actually don't, if it's not natural to our behavior, then it has no value. Because if I'm not doing what I'm telling you to do, then it's valueless. So we need to walk the talk because you're right, this world is very dangerous. This world is a very dangerous world. And I like the fact that you're saying that security needs to be transformed through care.
Yeah.
Well, this is one of the reasons that COVID was brought to us, because those 2 years of lockdown taught us all that how fragile we all are if we don't look after ourselves physically.
That was a huge
the head lesson. and the body. Okay, yeah. So I agree.
That was a huge lesson.
I'm with you in this global community, and one person at a time.
Yeah, I love you, Magda.
I love you too, and one person at a time. We will change the world through care.
Through care.
Through care.
That's it. Thank you so much, Magda.
Thank you.
All my love to you.
And love to you too. Bye.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus. Island Talks. Open. Diverse. Free.